Chapter 14. Gone. Charlotte. Mum. What are you looking for? The freezer. Were you looking for ice cream? Now I told you about helping yourself to ice cream. No, I wasn't going to take any ice cream. Anyway, there isn't any ice cream if that's what you're looking for. But, or any individual choc ices or any of those lollies you made or anything. All gone, I'm afraid. But, Mum, melted.
Melted?
Yes, it must have happened when we were away. Must have been a power cut or something. Anyway, it flipped the trip switch and the freezer must have been off for days. I opened up to get something out of and, well, what? Disgusting is hardly adequate, Charlotte. Now, excuse me, I want to give it another wipe round, just to be sure. I suppose I ought to leave the door open too, to let the air in. You mean, everything in the freezer melted? Isn't that what I just said?
Everything?
Yes, a right horrible mess it was too, Charlotte. Just imagine it. Thawed out fish, melted ice cream, soggy pizzas, mushy mints, sodden fish fingers, things I've made and put in there, fruit pie, sauces, gravies, stocks. Oh, you can't imagine the mess. And the smell when I opened the freezer door. Oh, it smelled as if something had died in there.
Died?
Died. We were lucky the place wasn't full of maggots and blue bottles. But, Mum, that's terrible, that's awful. Yes, I know, dear, but it's not so bad. It's all covered under the household insurance. We can go to the supermarket later and stock up with everything. At least it'll all be paid for. It's the mess and the inconvenience more than anything. But, Mum, what did you do with it all? Charlotte's mother looked up from her sponge and her cleaning spray and her wiping.
Do with it, dear?
Yes, all the melted things, all the mess. Charlotte's mother gave her a little chuckle.
I didn't do anything with it, dear, she winked.
I got your father to do all that. I soon got him cracking on the case with a pair of rubber gloves and a couple of bin liners. He just scooped everything out of there, all into the bin liners, then off to the tip.
The tip? The tip? You threw everything away. You didn't keep anything.
Charlotte's mother paused in her wiping.
Keep anything? You can't be serious, dear. Why would we want to keep anything? Have you ever actually seen a soggy fish finger lying in a pool of melted strawberry ice cream?
It isn't what you'd call appetising, dear, I can tell you that.
Yes, but there was something in there.
What?
There was...
Charlotte's mother was looking at her expectantly, but she knew that she couldn't say the words. It was pointless. She would never be believed. Not now, not with the evidence gone.
There was what, dear? Oh, nothing. I thought I might have left something in there.
What?
I don't remember.
Really, Charlotte, whatever are you on about? Now, come on, excuse me, out of the way. I must get this cleaned out thoroughly before I turn it back on and get to its operating temperature.
Okay. Charlotte headed for the door. Mum, where did Dad take everything?
I told you, dear, to the tip. You don't want soggy food hanging around, all growing mouldy and the flies getting at it, do you?
No, Mum, I suppose not.
So how's Fergal, by the way? You didn't stay there long. You haven't fallen out, have you?
Charlotte wished she didn't have to tell her mother what had happened. She wished that somebody else could do it, but there was no one else, only her.
Mum, Fergal's disappeared. Her mother looked up from the freezer.
He's done what?
Tins. They were all right in moderation, but then wasn't everything tins. The sight, the noise, the repetitious movement, the monotony, the endlessness of tins. Fergal picked up another batch and began to pack them in the box. The instant he did, the conveyor brought more. Each box held 144 tins. They were packed in 12s, 12 along, 12 across. Would this be it forever now, he wondered, nothing but tins? Or was there an escape from them? Could he escape? The others had managed, had they? They had tried and failed, and their very attempt was, in fact, responsible for bringing him there. The futile attempts of others to escape the trap had lured him into it. And if he tried to escape now himself, or to put his own message into a bottle, his own plea for help, and if he threw it out into the vast ocean of the world, would somebody come to his rescue, and succeed in rescuing him and the others? Or would they too be ensnared forever, like rats in a trap? He dropped the tins into the box, closed the lid, and pushed it on its way. It rattled off down a set of metal rollers, to there something else was waiting. The person there tore a length of tape from a dispenser and used it to seal the lid of the box. Then on it went, down the rollers, toward the dispatch bay. More tins were coming. Where's the box? It wasn't ready. The boxes came in flat packs and had to be made up. Xavier, the box maker, had fallen asleep. Fergal turned and saw him. There he was, standing upright, head against a pillar, a flat piece of cardboard in his arms, fast, fast asleep. So fast he was at a standstill. The box! Quick, the box! Fergal shook him awake. The box maker looked around, bleary-eyed, not knowing where he was, expecting to see green fields and a blue horizon, or perhaps an azure sea. But not this. Anything, anywhere but this. Not this drab dullness, this flaking paint and clanking machinery, and the eternal procession of silver soldiers with their label uniforms and shiny helmets. Run, run, the tins are coming. The tins, Fergal shouted. The tins, where's the box? The tins. If the box maker didn't do his job, Fergal couldn't do his. There was no time for friendships, pleasantries, no chance to pass the time of day, to chat or to share memories and personal details and reminiscences of a former life. Everything was subservient to the tins. The boxmaker stared at him, goggle-eyed, bewildered by tiredness. What was he doing here, and what was he supposed to do? The box, Fergal shouted angrily. I need a box. He was grabbing tins off the conveyor now and stacking them onto the floor. There was nowhere else to put them, nowhere else for them to go. If he didn't stack them, they would just roll off the end of the conveyor belt and bang and clatter onto the floor. They would fall like drops from a tap, splish splosh into a sink. But when they landed, they might get damaged, be dented and bashed, and sooner or later, DS would come to check up on him, come to see that he would be working fast enough. And when he saw the damaged tins lying on the cold concrete floor, there would be trouble. Big, big trouble. The sort of trouble you didn't want to get into. The kind it was hard to get out of. Quick, quick! The boxmaker struggled to assemble the flat box. The sides and the bottom slotted together. It was easy enough to do, even if the repetition made it dull and deadly boring. Doing it all day or half the night made your arms sore and your shoulders ache. Yes, it was easy enough once you had got into a rhythm and a routine. But break that for a moment, lose momentum, lose the beat, and suddenly you were fingers and thumbs, clumsy and useless, not able to piece things together anymore. Come on, come on, come on, Fergal hissed. Come on! But the boxmaker couldn't do it. His hands were tired and useless. He couldn't do it anymore. He started to cry. And still the tins kept coming. Fergal grabbed another wave of them and stacked them on the floor. We're falling behind. We'll never catch up if we let it go on. Quick! But it was no use. The boxmaker was sitting crying now, fumbling with the flat cardboard, looking like someone trying to make a complicated piece of origami. Fergal's anger turned to pity. He grabbed the boxmaker by the scruff of his shirt and pulled him to his feet. Take over the tins, stack them on the floor and don't drop any. Mechanically moving like a robot, the boxmaker obeyed. He seemed able to manage this. Reach, pick up, put down, reach, pick up, put down. Towers of tins began to take shape on the floor. First one, then another. Fergal made the box up. Then he took another piece of cardboard. The tin towers grew higher. Reach, pick up, put down, higher still. Fergal reached for another piece of flat cardboard, began to make up another box. Still, the tins kept coming. The towers became a city now, and the city went on growing. Okay, both of us, yelled Fergal. Three boxes made, three boxes backlog, three boxes behind. Still, the tins kept coming. Into the boxes, the tins on the floor, and the ones on the conveyor belt too. Don't let them fall. Fergal and Xavier worked swiftly and smoothly now. The crisis was shrinking. The boxmaker seemed able to cope again. That's one of them. Fergal hoisted the heavy box full of tins up from the floor and set it on the rollers. Away it went to the lid sealer with his band of tape. Then onto the dispatch bay, rolling through a hole in the wall. Then it was gone. Was that a way out, Fergal wondered. A means of escape, maybe. Maybe it was, but he felt sure it would be guarded. DS would have thought of that. He wouldn't let anyone get away that easily, would he? Still, the tins kept coming. They packed them into the boxes and managed to catch up. Okay, you all right now? The boxmaker nodded and went back to making up the boxes. The process ran on as before, like clockwork. Cold, cruel clockwork. There was nothing human about it. This wasn't about machines at the service of mankind. It was mankind, the slaves of machines. And still the tins kept coming. Tins, tins, tins. Fergal looked around the dull, drab surroundings. If he couldn't leave, then how could he get a message out? How could he get help? The answer was obvious. Others had thought of it before him. A message in a bottle. The clank of the roller seemed to sing it. Message in a bottle. Message in a bottle. That was what had brought him here, and that was the one thing Diaz didn't know about. How did you get here? What brought you here, huh? Fergal had never said. He'd had the good sense not to reveal that. That line of communication was still secure. Unreliable, erratic and unpredictable, and success was not guaranteed, but it was secure. Message in a bottle, message in a tin. But how was he to get a message into one of those tins? Obviously it could be done. It had been done, but where could he get paper from? And something to write with. A pencil, a pen. And suppose he managed to write a message. And supposing he got it inside a tin. And supposing that tin was smuggled out, nestling in a box, among all the other tins. Even supposing that it got out into the world, would anyone ever find it? Suppose he could somehow sabotage the tin, so that its label would come off in transit. So that when the box finally arrived at its destination and was unpacked, and when the shell stacker went to put the tin on the shelf, it would have no label, or the label would be left lying in the box. And of course, they weren't going to bother to stick it back on. They'd just throw it away, into the bin, and the tin would never be opened or seen again. Or, it would be put into the bargain basket. There it would lie, waiting for the bargain hunters, for the ones who liked to take a gamble, or even for people just like him, people who collected tins. Sad people, mad people, odd people, not altogether fitting in people, people who were a bit too clever or a bit too daft. And one of them might buy the tin, the strange lightweight tin with no label, and they would take it home and open it up and take out his note, his plea for his help, and then they would throw it into the bin, scrumple it up, chuck it away, think it was all a stupid joke, pay no further attention to it, and that would be the fate of his message in a bottle. Sunk to the bottom, lost at sea, colonised by barnacles, strangled by seaweed, swallowed by a shark. And he would never know. He would just go on hoping and waiting and praying and dreaming and wondering if his message had ever been found. He would go on as he was, shipwrecked and cast away in this awful place, marooned in the ocean of noise and work with endless monotony, with the massive, unconquerable shoals of tins, tins, tins swimming towards him forever and ever. Or they might not throw it into the bin. There was the possibility, the so slim, so slender, so fine and delicate thread of possibility, the possibility that someone might find it, read it and believe in it and be moved to act upon it, just as Fergal had. Yes, that was what he had to believe in. That was whom he had to put his trust in someone like himself, someone a little bit unconventional. Someone like himself or Charlotte. Yes, ask for help, but warn them of the dangers. Tell them to be careful, very, very careful, so that they didn't become victims to themselves. Only, where was he going to get the paper he needed? He could rip the label off a full tin of the conveyor belt that would give him paper, only it would also create another label-less tin, one more for the bargain basket, which would reduce the chances of any tin with a message in it being found. That would obviously make things even worse. So where? Fergal went on packing the tins. As he did, he looked back down the production line. The room went back a long, long way. It was dimly lit and airless, neither heated nor air-conditioned. The kind of place that would be stifling in summer and freezing cold in winter. At the far end of the room, the tins emerged from the filling and ceiling area via a hatch in the wall. The sickly sweet smell, which he had at first found nauseating, no longer bothered him. It was part of the background now, like the noise and the stale air. The silver tins were carried along, six abreast, and then were channelled into a narrower conveyor, which took them, one at a time, into the labelling machine. Gdunk sloop. The sound the labeller made as it wrapped a label around every tin. The labels were in continuous roll and were cut to size and glued on by the machine. And they were made of paper. Paper. There was the paper. If he could just get his hands on it. Paper for a message. Lots of it. How was he going to do it? The labeller was 50 feet from him. He would have to run there, pull off a length of label paper and run back. 100 feet altogether. How long would that take him? 10 seconds, maybe, there and back, plus time to pull a stretch of label paper off and stuff it into his pocket. 10 seconds. How many tins would fall off the conveyor in that time? Fergal counted. How fast were they coming? A one, a two, about two a second. Two tins a second. 10 seconds to get them and to come back. Allow 15 for errors. 15 seconds at two tins a second. 30 tins. He would miss 30 tins. It was too many. If 30 tins fell on the floor and Diaz came by and saw 30 dented tins, no, he couldn't take the risk. He would need help. From where, though? The box maker. It would have to be. Fergal had helped him. Now he would have to return the favour. Xavier, he looked up. Cover for me. Xavier didn't understand. His English was poor, almost non-existent. Cover for me. Fergal mimed a dumb show of what he wanted from him to do. The boxmaker looked panic-stricken, as if he feared that Fergal was asking him to take over both jobs forever. But then he seemed to understand that it was only for a moment. He nodded and got ready. Now, the boxmaker took over the can stacking. Fergal ran. He sprinted the 50 feet to the labeller. He'd never run so fast in his life. He did it in seconds. He grabbed at the roll of paper just as the machine went to wrap a label around the tin, the cutter narrowly missing his fingers. Instead of the tin, it wrapped the label around his hand instead. He needed more labels. One piece of paper might not be enough. Better to get several. He yanked the roll again and a length of paper spun off. The cutter bit through it with a decisive chop. Maybe just one more now to be on the safe side. If trying to be on the safe side wasn't too much of a risk. Fergal! Xavier called his name, starting to panic now, afraid that he couldn't cope. Coming! The arm of the labeller moved back and forth again, and again the razor-sharp cutter sliced at the paper, missing Fergal's fingers by millimetres. It made him think of that fast-food advertisement for takeaway chicken. Finger-licking good, the slogan had said. Only this was finger-chopping. Yes, finger-chopping, finger-slicing, finger-dicing bad. Fergal scissor hands. Please, no, not that. Got it. He ran back, stuffing the paper into his pocket as he went. OK, Xavier, I've got them. Back to the boxes. They had fallen behind a little, but not by much. The next box wasn't quite ready, but Fergal only had to stack about 10 tins on the floor before they caught up with the backlog. Thanks, Xavier nodded. Fergal wondered about him. Had he guessed why Fergal had wanted the paper? Did he have any inkling of what he was up to? If he did, would he betray him? Maybe, maybe not. There were chances you just had to take. The tins kept coming. Fergal went on putting them into the boxes. 12 by 12, 144. How nice, how very useful to know your 12 times tables. He reached out and picked up the next in line. Two silver tins without labels. He quickly put them into the box and hastily closed the lid. He didn't want Diaz coming by and seeing that. He might start asking questions. Fergal pushed the box on down the rollers and to the child who taped the boxes. Only when he saw that the lid had been sealed did he feel able to relax. He wondered if the box taper had seen what he had done and if she might betray him too. But she, like all the others, looked dull, glassy-eyed and uninterested. Broken in body and spirit by the dull monotony of the factory. By tins. Fergal had paper. All he needed now was something to write with. And then the chance to slip the message into one of the tins before it was filled and sealed. After that, he needed the right person to find it. To, what do you think you're doing? Diaz stood in front of him. For such a big man, he was surprisingly quiet. He could creep up on you quite undetected. You were turning, he would be there. Nothing, just working. Good, then see you do. His shirt was white. It looked fresh on and neatly pressed. He wore a striped tie around his neck, and to protect his clothes, he had on a brown overall coat, which almost came down to his knees. What was most repulsive about him was his complete and utter respectability, his seeming ordinariness. His hair was cut short and neatly combed, his complexion was florid, his face clean shaven, apart from a small clipped moustache. He was heavy and overweight. The only unusual thing about him was his left hand. It lacked a finger. The small finger, the one on which you might wear a signet ring, if you had one, if your name was Jonathan Dimble Smith. Carry on then, he said, just carry on. Excuse me. Fergal's mouth was suddenly dry. He felt like Oliver's Twist asking for more, though all he wanted was less. When do we get a break, please? DS stopped in his tracks. A break? Yes, don't we get a break today? You get a break when you finish. But we've been working for hours. Then when you've been working for a few more hours, you'll get a break, won't you? But what? Fergal could see there was no point in continuing. Nothing. Good. Diaz gave a small snort and moved on his way. As he went, Fergal saw something fall from his coat. It rolled towards him. He looked down, and there it was on the floor. It must have dropped from a hole in Diaz's pocket or from the frayed inner lining. It was a ballpoint pen, cheap and ordinary and costing no more than a few pence. But to Fergal, it was worth a small fortune. He hurried to it and picked it up. It was safely in his pocket before Diaz could turn round, take a last look at the packing bay, snort again and move on. The tins kept coming. Fergal picked up two more and placed them into a box. Even as he did so, another two were on the way, and another two were following them. Endless hordes of tins.